Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Carol Harnett, and I am the president of the Council for Disability Awareness. And welcome to our show, which is called the Financial Health and Income Network. Our tour today, or our discussion today, is going to be around open enrollment and how consumers and employees can make the best choices possible during this process, which so many people find intimidating. And I'm pleased to have a longtime friend and colleague as my guest today. Phil Broon is the Vice President of Group Life and Disability Products at MetLife, and MetLife is a member company of the Council for Disability Awareness. And we act in a role as a nonprofit, primarily educating employees and consumers and employers about issues around employee benefits, with a particular focus on what we would call income protection products, which is a name that probably is meaningless to consumers, and what that actually means is insurance that helps people protect their income stream, whether it's through disability insurance or critical illness insurance, accident insurance, and a assorted group of products. So welcome, Phil, and thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thanks, Carol. Glad to be here.
So with no further ado, let's get started. You know, both of us have been around a long time. We've been working a long time. We've been through open enrollment, or what some people will call annual enrollment, both personally and professionally, for decades. And I'm curious, because I feel like in my career, the process has actually changed a lot. How have you seen it evolve over time?
Yeah, thanks, Carol. It has evolved over time. And, you know, I would, the way we think about it is actually using the term annual enrollment. So it's a way everyone to at least one time a year take a look at, and typically that's how the enrollment process works for benefits for employers, is once a year there's an update or an annual refresher, if you would, of the benefit package. And so thinking of it in the context of a one time a year annual enrollment is one way that I think it's changed. So that opportunity for employees to step back and take a look at what's changed, how their goals and objectives may have evolved or do evolve over time, and what does that mean in terms of the benefits they have available to help them meet those goals. And really with a mindset of really refreshing this, almost like a tune-up, every year, once a year, certainly important all year long, but at least on an annual basis to take a look at it. I think the other change here is that, and I can speak to this personally, I think I only cared about looking at the healthcare plan. What's happening to my medical benefits? What's happening as it relates to my deductible and my co-pays, or the network that my providers are in? So a lot of focus, I think, historically on the medical plan. And then how that's evolved, I think, has been really just almost all the focus I would think about was on the medical plan. I think what's changing now is, and I can speak to it again, is that that's one aspect of all of our goals and needs is around our health, but there's more beyond the medical plan. And so I think that's what's also changed, is stepping back to take a look at overall benefits and how those will help an individual achieve their long-term goals and objectives.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's a really good point. I mean, we could certainly talk about things like how the technology has changed, right, in the years since we started doing benefits. I mean, I remember when I first started working, I didn't have to choose my benefits. They were just given to me by my employer, and believe it or not, paid for by my employer. And then, you know, we evolved into this point where we had to make a lot of choice. And I know in my career, I largely have worked for employers, but I've had a good span of time, probably about 7 years, where I was in my own business and fully providing my own benefits. And I think for me, that was one of the most helpful experiences as to how you think about what you actually need. And to your point, I certainly started with medical. I worked in healthcare in the beginning of my career, and I worked at some outstanding facilities, including the Kessler Institute for Rehab, which is still the number 2 rehab hospital in the country. And so I knew what outstanding care was. And for me, I always wanted to make sure I had access to that very best care. In fact, my parents really raised us with great respect for trying to find the best medical care. So I certainly started there, but the skinnying down, for lack of a better term, of my benefits, because now I was providing them, was an interesting process to go through. And I found I focused on my health first. And then I thought about how whatever selections I made would impact the people who love me and care about me and would wind up taking care of me if something ever bad happened. And the next thing I actually thought about legitimately was my income. I was very fortunate that I had disability insurance already. I did expand my disability insurance coverage. And the other thing I did, which not necessarily something we're going to talk about today, but it's also in many ways income related, is I bought a long-term care policy. So I said, well, if I get sick, I want to still make sure I have yet another way to get some income and help with medical. And then, frankly, the last thing I did is I've always had retirement through employers, but I developed a process to continue to plan for retirement as a single business owner. So I think those things are important, too, because I think as benefits, and I don't know what your experience has been, but as benefits has evolved, we've given people more and more and more options, and I think sometimes that can be really confusing.
No, and absolutely right. And it's kind of interesting. Early on, as you said, in the enrollment process, we lived in a world of paper. And it may have been cumbersome, but I think one of the benefits of paper is that individuals had something in front of them. They usually had to fill it out, step back, and think about the benefit choices they had. Then we moved on to more of a technology platform. I've seen more of what we would think of as more of a passive process, where individuals would have to go to a portal or a website. Can create confusion if there's so many choices, which is a good thing to give employees choices and the benefits that they can elect. What's really important is what choices are important to me individually and how do those choices change over time? So I think you're spot on, Carol, that I think what we've found is that putting it in the context of in a very personal way is what we think is really where the future is in terms of an annual enrollment exercise for individuals. So really stepping back and really taking a moment to step back and think about it on an annual basis. What are my dreams and how have they changed? And how do I protect those dreams in the event of something that might happen? And so this concept around income protection, I think, becomes a byproduct of really stepping back to think about what an individual's aspirations and dreams are. A lot of individuals spend time talking about the future and what their dreams are, but they rarely put it in the context of the benefits that can help them fulfill those dreams. And so we're spending more time to thinking about how to actually help individuals in that conversation. And one of the ways we suggest that anyone who's looking at their benefits this year to actually talk to their friends and coworkers, to have some meaningful conversations about their dreams and really how others think about that and some benefits to help them take action, because there's no question there's an information overload. So we do know that individuals talk to their colleagues when they're trying to decide benefits to choose. We're also helping those individuals with really, and others do as well, helping them, educate them around, well, people like me, guidance around what tied the benefit choices to these objectives they have around their future in terms of retirement, their income protection needs, certainly asset protection as well, and their health. Health is always is very mm-hmm. important, but putting them all in context, and then also how the benefit package can help support those objectives over time.
You know, I really love that concept of what your dreams are. That's a really interesting way to do it. And it's also, I mean, some of the things you've been alluding to or referring to when you talk about benefits, I think is something we hear more now is this idea of life stages. And, you know, as your life, as a change happens in your life, and you know, when you're young, it might be moving in with somebody or in a committed relationship or getting married and buying a home and maybe having kids or maybe not having kids, which is a choice more people are actively making. And then your kids leaving and then you're in yet another life stage. And, and then people, there's a new trend, particularly in the what we're calling the millennial generation, where they're trying to develop a plan to retire earlier and do something different. So I think that's a two great tips. One is to identify your dreams and talk about them with others and then to relate those dreams to your benefits. Is there something I can do through the benefit choices I make to allow that to happen? And not to denigrate any benefits, but if, let's say, one of your dreams is to retire is earlier in your career than maybe your parents did or some of your friends are going to, is to make sure you're choosing benefits that help with that plan. So I think that's a great tip. Another thing I wanted to talk with you about, because I do think we've had a lot of experience in navigating this and also in even helping employers figure out how to set up open enrollment, at least related to some benefits. In your personal experience, do you have, you've given some definition already to this, but do you have one or two tips that you've learned as an employee for how to make the most of open enrollment or how, what some people would say is how to successfully get through open enrollment?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of tips. I think the first one is actually to step back and pause and to look at what's available, not just what's changed. So I think we all read in annual enrollment what's changed, what's new. That's helpful, right? But also to go a little deeper to see, okay, what are my benefits that are available to me and how do those line back up to my dreams? I think quite often I do this personally. I think I always focus on, okay, what's happened to the medical? There's a new benefit being provided or an enhancement to the dental plan or some change to the disability plan. But I don't actually step back and say, well, what do I already have for coverage? And what might I want to do to change or adjust those? So spending a little bit more time, just a couple more steps to do that, and then to think through that, maybe pause, talk to a loved one and spouse about those options, and then to come back to finalize enrollment. I said that's probably the second tip would be to definitely complete the enrollment, to make it an active exercise individually, but maybe also think about it may take a minute or two. You may have to do it outside of work to take a look at the overall plan that an individual has and then come back and take some action in a more meaningful way. Sometimes it can be hard to do that all in 5 minutes online, if you would, during the middle of the work, or take it offline after work and think through that, those benefit choices.
You know, I think that's a really good tip because I know in my time in doing online enrollment at various employers, the pattern that seemed to repeat itself year over year over year is the far majority of employees waited to the last week of the open enrollment
right.
period, and some of them waited to the last day. And I can remember several times that one employer would get a note because then the system would pretty much get locked up or crash, and we get this note of, okay, we're going to extend it by 2 more days. Can some people please come off? And that sense of it being a chore, instead of this opportunity, I know I
right.
lost sight
Absolutely.
Of it, so I can't imagine people lose sight. This is actually really valuable. You know, employers spend about 30 to 35% of what your base salary is on your benefits. And so it's like a third more of your salary. And we just kind of cram it in, to your point, to like 5 or 15 minutes, just checking the
Absolutely.
Box.
Absolutely. You know, I'm guilty as charged as well, right?
Me too.
Right. Just wait till the last minute. And then quite often, if there's no action, individuals are defaulted into a set of benefits that may likely not even be appropriate for their circumstances. So spend a little time as soon as those communications come out and print the material off or read it online and step back and think about that. That would be a suggestion.
Yeah, and I like the idea of taking a pause and talking with the people who are impacted by your choices, like your spouse, or even if you're a single person, just, you know, even like your family members who might wind up in a situation of having to help you if you ever did have something odd happen to you particularly from a health perspective that would impact your ability to work or need to travel someplace to get care. Those are really important things. You know, one of the last things I wanted to talk with you about, because we're trying to keep these episodes just short enough that people will want to listen to the end, but you and I both have spent a good part of our career working in the area of disability and disability insurance. I did it from both a healthcare perspective and an insurance perspective and a consultant perspective, and I know you've done it on multiple levels. And the Council for Disability Awareness did a consumer survey a couple of years ago, and there was really only one thing that particularly just jumped out at me, and I loved the question. And the question was, other than your family and your friends, what are the three things that are most important to you? And again, this is a group of people who are consumers of working age. And by far, there were three choices people made that stood out, and all the other ones dropped off in a huge, huge band of difference. And they were, people said their health, their income, and their home, where they live, were the three things that were most important to them. And the secondary or follow-up question to that was, of these three things, you know, do you have insurance to protect those things? And health, by far, more than 90% of people had health insurance. And part of that was, we were asking the question, you know, after the Affordable Care Act, what some people call Obamacare, was in place. And so certainly you get it from work, but for people who didn't get it through work, they now had incentives coupled with a mandate to get that coverage. So more than 90% of people had coverage. And then when we looked at people who either owned or rented homes, again, the far majority of them had either homeowners insurance or renters insurance, because if you have a mortgage, you're required to have homeowners insurance. And then hopefully if you don't have a mortgage, you would still have that coverage because it's important. And the same with renters insurance. More and more and more landlords require evidence of renters insurance. The disturbing thing for me was this income question, the number two topic that was most important to people other than their family and their friends, and less than 30% of this particular group of people had any form in their report of income insurance or disability insurance. I know you've worked in this space even longer than I have. How would you tell people to think about their income and what protecting their income means from an employee benefits perspective?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think I'll bring it back to the enrollment conversation, right? So I think if everyone could think, I would suggest that folks might think of disability protection as that card that you have in your proof of insurance card you have when you're in the auto driving. If something happens, you always can pull out that proof of insurance. If we could think of a mindset around disability, that we need that proof of insurance, that it's a baseline need that we all have to protect our incomes, because it truly protects everything else. I think that what can get in the way sometimes is individuals think, well, that's never going to happen to me. when in fact we all know individuals where they may be out of work for a period of time. The good news is most people actually do return to work, but they need that safety net, as we all know that the majority of individuals live paycheck to paycheck. So what would happen if that paycheck wasn't coming in? So I think understanding this proof of insurance concept, I think, is helpful. But to get started is to, again, go back to that benefit package and see what the an employer is providing. So there can be paid time off, paid leave. There can be some benefits that the employer would provide. But more often than not, there'll be a need to supplement or augment those benefits. And more often than not, the benefit package will have choices that individuals can take to help provide income protection. And I suggest that comes in a few different ways. There's a baseline of income protection to help cover for day-to-day living expenses, and that's typically short-term disability and long-term disability. And that's a baseline core benefit to look, make sure that if it's something that your employer is providing, that's great. If it's not, to look to see if there's an option to purchase some basic levels of short-term and long-term disability protection. The second aspect I think of around income protection would be to also provide levels of protection for what might be a more severe event, even if it's a temporary event, that can help augment that income protection for critical illness or certain accident scenarios that might happen where that individual is going to have additional expenses above what they normally would have on a day-to-day basis. Could be transportation, it could be daycare, it could be to cover costs that aren't covered under the medical plan. And I suggest that's another layer of income protection. So think of it like a short-term or long-term disability solution, and then also look to see if there's some benefit options for accident protection or critical illness would be a couple of examples to help supplement those. You know, I'd also point out, it gets a little complicated, there can be state mandated leaves as well. So having an understanding if an individual lives that's for both employee income protection, but also income protection in the event of family or bonding time off. So it's helpful to understand if you live in one of those states, if there's a baseline or mandated level of protection that the individual person would have. I'd also suggest, even in that circumstance, I'm getting a little complicated here, I apologize, there can be a need to actually supplement what the state mandated plan would be. And I could give you a couple of, you know, so for individuals in those states, it's helpful to take a look and understand what's being provided. If a person lives in California, in New York, presently Rhode Island, Hawaii, certainly now in the future, not presently in this annual enrollment, but in the future of Washington State, Washington, D.C., as well as Massachusetts. I probably missed one in there, but those are also helpful to have. It gets a little complicated, but again, I think that what's most important is think of it as proof of insurance, that everyone should have it. There's a basic level of protection, I think, that's critical for folks when they're into a period of time of disability to help essentially meet those daily living needs and to protect everything else that they work for.
You know, Phil, thank you so much. I really appreciate that overview. And as you were talking, I was being reflective, again, of my own choices, not that they have to be other people's choices. But when I was still in graduate school, and that was full time for me, and I was on a research assistantship, so I had a small salary. They actually paid my medical benefits, my health insurance premiums, which they needed to because we didn't make a lot of money. So I actually was a low-wage earner when I was in school. I had an opportunity through my professional association. So even though I was in grad school, I'd already joined my professional association to get disability insurance. And my dad actually said to me, and I'm literally 23 years old, he said, you know, he said, your scholarship is both a job and a free education, but it also has benefits. And if you get sick, you could risk losing those things. And so I took this opportunity to sign up for an association disability policy, which was, at that time, the only option was a one-year short-term policy, but it would have covered my expenses. And then I went to my first job. I happen to work in New Jersey, which has state mandated disability insurance. But even the employer offered us an opportunity to buy what we would now call worksite insurance. And so I had a worksite policy that supplemented both what I already had and the state mandated. And then I switched employers and wound up with a long-term disability policy that was paid by the employer. And then it, as my career was growing, I added an individual disability coverage. So at one point in my life, I actually had four forms of disability insurance, and five if you count the years I worked in New Jersey and in California. So, but I did feel that need to supplement because I could not have paid my bills. In one case, I couldn't have paid my rent if I just relied on one of those forms of coverage. So I think that's a great analogy. So looking at the clock, and so I think it's a good time for us to summarize. And so, Phil, first of all, I want to thank you. And there's another part of my life. I'm a writer and a journalist, and I actually took some key notes on what you said, and this is what I'd love to leave people with as they think about going through this annual benefits enrollment process and actively participating instead of just ultimately sometimes winding up with what the system will default for you. And my favorite quote, Phil, is yours of thinking about what are my dreams and how have they changed and how could your employee benefit selection help you with your dreams, which what a great way to think about that is. And then secondly, to talk to your friends and talk to your colleagues and your coworkers about what their dreams are and about how they might be thinking about making benefits choices that would help them with that. And then as you look at your benefits, to not necessarily look at just what's changed, but to look at what's available. And again, how is that going to help you relative to where you are in your life and in your family's life? And to try to do that a little bit earlier than the last day or two of open enrollment or annual enrollment and take a pause and talk with your spouse or your significant other or your loved ones about the choices you're thinking about making. And then certainly I think for both of us and certainly the Council for Disability Awareness and MetLife as a major player in the disability insurance and income protection markets is to how do you think about ensuring the thing that we that consumers do tell us is the second most important thing to them, which is their income. I love thinking about that idea of proof of income and to think about short and long-term disability as a baseline and critical illness and accident as another layer of protection for those severe events that we don't always think are going to happen to us. And then to finally be curious in the state you're in about what is available potentially around what's being called paid leave or parental leave or caregiving leave or state-mandated benefits and understanding those. So again, Phil, thank you so much for being our guest. You provided so much information and a great conversation, and we hope that you'll return to our show at another time.
Thanks, Carol. Glad to be joining you. Look forward to the next conversation.
Thank you. And for our listeners, if you have any other questions, feel free to go to our consumer site, which is realitycheckup.org. Thank you, everyone.